Boston at 10:06.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. More than 50 Israelis and Palestinians have now died in Mideast violence in the last week. In the last hour, five more Palestinians were killed in an Israeli missile attack in Gaza City. All of this in the week since the formal summit meeting on the so-called roadmap to peace. Once again, it seems that it's simply easier to keep fighting. Easier for both Israeli and Palestinian leaders to satisfy their constituencies with the tough and uncompromising use of helicopter rockets and suicide bombs. The backlash against peace was predicted. There are Israelis and Palestinians who don't like the roadmap. What's different is the even more direct involvement of the United States. President George Bush was on the road in Chicago yesterday when he got news of the bus bomb in Jerusalem.
I strongly condemn the killings. And I urge and call upon all the free world, nations which love peace, to not only condemn the killings, but to use every ounce of their power to prevent them from happening in the future.
But while Bush makes his call to all of the free world, most attention remains on him and his administration. It was, after all, President Bush who promised in Jordan to ride herd on the peace process. Connection listeners, can the United States do more to press for peace in the Middle East? Some in Washington, Republicans even, are calling on the Bush administration to send in American peacekeepers. There are calls to send in NATO troops. But would that make a difference? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we will be talking with a number of people this hour, hearing news and analysis from the region and from here. First, though, to Robin Wright. She's chief diplomatic correspondent for the LA Times, author of the book Sacred Rage, The Rise of Militant Islam. She's reporting on how the Bush administration is reacting to the latest violence in the Middle East.
The administration is scrambling at the moment to look for agreements to translate the principles everyone signed on to last week to move the process forward in the aftermath of a spate of attacks by Palestinians and counterstrikes by the Israelis.
Robin, does that mean that there are more people weighing in and giving their suggestions to the Bush administration? We should do this. We should do this.
There are a lot of new ideas that are floating around Washington. The administration for the moment says it is sticking to a specific course, urging both sides to use restraint. And the president has used tough language Tuesday again on Israel and on Wednesday directed at the Palestinians, the Arab world, and European allies. Now, however, there's a cacophony of voices urging drastic actions to get this process back on track, because most people believe that restraint alone will not work.
What are some of the new suggestions then, Robin?
One of them is to deploy NATO troops. This is an idea proposed by Senator John Warner of Virginia. He's arguing that foreign forces are needed to separate the Israelis and Palestinians, first to protect Israelis, to provide that sense of security so that there won't be these suicide attacks, but also to give the Palestinians some time, this new government of Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, to rebuild his security forces, which have been shattered in part during the Israeli crackdown and discredited by the Intifada. And now the United States, with help from Jordan and Egypt, are trying to rebuild the security forces basically from scratch in many areas.
Any talk of just sending in U.S. soldiers?
That's another idea that's on the table, in part because it's widely believed the Israelis would not accept NATO troops. They are very suspicious of Europe particularly, and what the Israelis believe is a pro-Palestinian slant in many European capitals. So this is an idea that the Israelis might find more acceptable, but the Palestinians and the Arab world may be a little bit more concerned about, in part because the United States military is in many parts of the region. One of the big issues on that front is also whether the United States actually has the kind of military presence to the numbers of troops. We're involved in Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, Iraq, Korea, Germany, were deployed a lot of places, and there's an issue actually about whether the United States has the kind of force to deploy there.
Now, you were saying earlier that the administration's current tact is to continue urging both sides to go towards peace, but I'm not sure whether or not that's going to be enough, given Bush's direct involvement in the peace process now. Does that mean that the president or the national security advisor, secretary of state, are actually listening to any of these suggestions of getting soldiers in, of making some sort of dramatic change in policy?
Well, as often happens with policy, ideas float around before they actually are absorbed by an administration. The interesting thing is that many of these ideas are coming from Republicans. They are not from, there's not a bipartisan split on this issue. There are a lot of parties from both sides of the aisle in Congress, lobbying groups, that a cry for something more dramatic, in part because the United States and this presidency is now so deeply involved in this peace process. The United States has really been removed since the beginning of the Bush administration, except a lot of words. Now we're deeply committed, and there's a sense that something has to happen, particularly if we continue to see more violence in the region. We're more likely to see some of these ideas taken a bit more seriously.
Robin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Robin Wright is chief diplomatic correspondent with the Los Angeles Times. We're going to go to the West Bank now. Ian Fisher is a correspondent with the New York Times. He's joining us on the phone from Hebron. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Tell me what you're covering today in Hebron.
Well, today we're going to try to talk to the family of the young Palestinian man who blew himself up yesterday in Jerusalem. I'm just trying to get a sense of, who he is and, what may have led to this from the more personal point of view.
Ian, you've had the opportunity to listen to what people in Jerusalem are saying, and you're now in Hebron. What are the two sides saying about the future involvement of the United States?
I think first people aren't really clear that this peace plan is actually going to happen. After 32 months of violence, there's very little trust on either side, and the area has seen peace plans come and go. So what the United States is going to do, from the Israeli side, they sort of feel, many feel as if it's good that, America is pushing this now, although many of those more right-wingers believe that America's involvement is very naive and is pushing Prime Minister Ariel Sharon too far. On the Palestinian side, there seems to be a greater sense that I've seen recently that America is no longer an honest broker, that the Bush administration is a little too close to the Sharon administration, and they look, two countries over to Iraq, and they see another occupation, and they're just wondering if America can, in fact, be the kind of more sort of impartial voice that it's tried to be in the past.
Ian, just one more question. I've got a news story here that's just off the AP wire saying that in response to Sharon's promise to hunt Palestinian militants down to the bitter end, the Islamic militant group Hamas has issued a new threat saying that it's now ordered all its military cells to take immediate action, also urging foreigners to leave Israel and Palestinian areas for their own safety. Is it your belief that this type of talk is rhetoric, or are things really becoming that much more dangerous?
It's hard to tell. I mean, Hamas is quite angry, and they're a pretty careful organization, and they do what they say often. They, said that they were going to, pull out of, they weren't going to support the Aqaba process, and they were going to launch attacks, and sure enough, they did. They're quite angry now because of Rantisi. They're maybe even more angry that there have been five attacks, assassinations in the last couple of days. Just another one just about 45 minutes ago in which a Hamas person was killed, but apparently four or five civilians as well. I wouldn't say no.
All right, Ian, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to
sure.
Spend some time with us. Ian Fisher, New York Times correspondent, joining us live on the phone from Hebron. And I'm going to our studio now, where Ambassador Richard Murphy's been standing by, listening in. He's a senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations and former U.S. ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia, knows that region well. Ambassador Murphy, welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Just a reaction from you on what you're hearing from Robin Wright, from Ian Fisher about this, you know, where the U.S. fits right now. Pressure here in this country, perhaps, to take a greater involvement. Reluctance and resistance still in the Middle East.
Well, the reluctance and the resistance in the Middle East doesn't surprise me. I think Ian Fisher said it well, that after all this time and the violence, we're either looked at as naive or that we're pushing Sharon too hard. On that point, obviously, what's pushing Sharon is his facing squarely the issue of demography. In so few years in the future, there's going to be a majority Arab population in the area governed by Israel if Israel doesn't find a political arrangement to get out of the West Bank and Gaza. In the U.S., the idea of a military involvement, be it NATO or the U.S., it's fascinating that it's coming from the Republicans, because I would have suspected that they would be more allergic to the idea than the Democrats would be. But given Senator Warner's statement, given Bill Kristol's position that maybe just American forces would be the answer, I have to wonder, though, what the mission would be and how the troops would be expected to carry it out, because it involves, it's not peace keeping, it's peacemaking. It involves force and a willingness to use force against both parties.
And would the Israelis ever imagine the idea of American soldiers on the streets in Jerusalem if that was part of an equation to try and minimize bus bombings, for example?
I would think they would be asking Washington, why do you think you could do it any better than we can? We who have worked in penetrating these terrorist groups and the various political groups of the Palestinian community all these years, why do you think you could do a better job than we can? And I think there would be great resistance.
But has the furniture been moved in the room since President Bush went to his own personal involvement? Has he changed the rules a little bit here?
Well, he has surprised the area, as he has surprised many in America, by the positions, the trip he made first to Sharm el-Sheikh to see the Arab leaders, then to Aqaba with the Israeli and Palestinian leadership. That he was ready to get involved was a surprise in the area, and, as I say, to many in the United States. And he did it against the backdrop of the military success in Iraq. The question is, does that great military success translate into giving the United States an extra political clout in dealing with a far older question than that of Saddam Hussein or earlier the Taliban in Afghanistan?
All right, Connection listeners, a short break here. We come back to talk further with Ambassador Murphy and to take your calls on whether or not the United States is in some manner obliged to get more involved in the Mideast peace process, either with the use of U.S. troops or involvement with a NATO peacekeeping or peacemaking force. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Former broadcast news anchor David Brinkley has died at the age of 82. ABC News.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-TALK. Taking a look at the changed role of the United States, or whether or not there is a changed role for the United States in the Middle East peace process. My guest this hour, Ambassador Richard Murphy, he's a senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations, was U.S. ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia for much of the 1980s, was assistant secretary for the Mideast under President Reagan. He's joining us from our studios in New York. And Ambassador, I want to go back to something that you said about the where the ideas are coming from, because if you're puzzled or surprised that the suggestions of sending soldiers in are actually coming from Republicans, do you have any idea how the administration is taking those suggestions? Are we getting any hints back from the Bush administration?
I certainly haven't heard any reactions from the administration as yet. But when it's coming from Senator Warner, from Bill Kristol, the White House, I think, will listen closely. They may end up very reluctant to commit, but I think everyone, be they Democrat or Republican, I didn't mean to imply that this is turning into a partisan issue, has to recognize that there simply is not the energy in the area between the part of the Israelis and the Palestinians to move towards peace. Something is needed from outside, and I think the United States, either politically, economically, perhaps militarily, is the force that is needed.
You know a lot better than I do how some of these diplomatic things work. Is it possible that the suggestions of a NATO involvement or U.S. forces involvement, coming as they are from Warner and Kristol, are in fact, you know, some stalking horses sent out by the administration just to see how those ideas are being received?
It's possible, but I suspect both those men have developed the ideas on their own rather than, hey, go forth and see if you can sell it, and then we'll, as an administration, see if we can move. I think they're probably generated by Warner and Kristol themselves.
We have joining us now on the line Ari Shavit. He's a journalist and a news analyst for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and Connection listeners will remember Ari for his involvement in a number of previous Connection shows. Ari, it's nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be back.
Ari, just an idea from you about how U.S. involvement is being viewed on the Israeli side now. Are people in any way expecting more, hoping for more from Washington?
Well, there were very high expectations last week with the Aqaba summit and with President Bush arriving in the area and putting his prestige on the line. And I think that most Israelis and probably most Palestinians thought that there is something hopeful happening here if the American president is taking such an initiative and such a stand. I personally think that there is something somewhat problematic in the way America is entering this process. And I must say that I have not only doubts, but some fears about the future if the American involvement here, which is, of course, necessary, is not handled right.
Fears of what?
I think that if you have a situation where the president, the leader of the free world, is in some sort of direct struggle with someone like Dr. Antisi from Gaza, and where the prestige of America as a superpower can be jeopardized by any five youngsters with the willingness to commit suicide bombings, then it might turn out to be counterproductive. If America is entering a process which is not solid enough, and the risks of it collapsing are pretty high, then definitely America, but all of us in the region as well, will be worse off at the end, because we do need America very much as a stabilizing power. If America gets too involved in something that is not well and deeply prepared, then the dangers are very high.
Are you saying that America should be very careful of the sort of day-to-day, more micromanagement of issues in the Middle East, perhaps in the way that President Clinton got himself burned that way?
Absolutely. I think we find ourselves in a very ironic position where the Republicans, who are very critical of President Clinton's President Clinton in two ways. One, his daily involvement, and the other, his tendency to create what was described as photo opportunities and, you know, cosmetic, superficial solutions which are not really solid and deep. And this is why the Republicans tended to be cautious and to go for deeper solutions and not for the day-to-day diplomatic extravaganza. A few years later, find themselves exactly in the position where President Clinton was. And I must say, I didn't know the bombings of yesterday are coming, but when I saw the Aqaba summit, It immediately took me back to 96 when we had all these peace ceremonies on the White House lawns. Mm-hmm. And a week or 2 weeks later, buses started getting exploded in the middle of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And this combination of peace ceremonies, premature peace ceremonies, with buses exploding is a very explosive one. First of all, there's something deeply wrong. It shows you that this process is deeply flawed to begin with. And this time, the prestige and the importance and of America and American president are on the line.
Ambassador Murphy, tell me your thoughts about whether or not the Bush administration risks American prestige by getting too closely involved.
Well, there are a number of ways that we can adjust the way we've been involved. They're less dramatic, and they could be productive. I'm thinking of, for instance, a small step of the financial assistance that we've provided to the Palestinians has been provided by a decision with the Congress directly to non-governmental organizations. They've used the money well. I'm not criticizing that. But this is a moment when every way should be explored to strengthen the hand of Abu Mazen and his leadership of the Palestinian Authority. Another use of money might be, well, this is much more sweeping, and it could affect, hopefully, thinking on both the Israeli and the Palestinian side, would be a commitment to housing guarantees down the road, housing guarantees in a two-state solution whereby money would be provided to Palestinians coming to the new Palestinian state and for Israeli settlers returning to Israel proper, in that some 80%, by common agreement, 80% of those settlers are what's known as economic settlers, not there for ideological reasons in the West Bank and Gaza.
Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Swampscott, Massachusetts now. Neil's joining us. Hi, Neil.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I want to say that, first of all, preface my comment I planned with, I knew that the bombs were coming. I have something I call the Palestinian-Israeli solution meter. And that is, the closer we get to a potential reasonable solution, the more virile and violent it will get there. So I wasn't surprised by the events. I very much expected them. That is the response I expected. It's not good, but I expected it. Regarding the troops, in my opinion, the problem with troops is U.S.-only troops will, in my opinion, certainly yield a Beirut-type attacks on those forces. Minimally, it has to be NATO troops. If the troops are positioned there, I think that could be helpful. NATO plus would probably be the desirable formula to instill confidence in both sides, where the fundamental premise is the furniture has been moved, and the most important point is demonstrable respect of Abu Mazen and the Palestinian yearning for a full-fledged state. And that would demonstrate that by that multinational effort.
Let me, Neil, just ask Ari Shavit whether or not the notion of Western troops as a bold and dramatic change to the everyday is something that's even being discussed.
I think it's very much premature. I do think that once a peace agreement or even an interim agreement is achieved, there might be a role, and it would be very benign and helpful on the behalf of the United States to make the commitment to have a peacekeeping force in this region. I think it would be helpful. It might even be necessary. But to think of sending troops into a region, into an area which is boiling with violence and hate, and there is not even the beginning of real mutual recognition between the parties, and there is so much support for terror activities on the Palestinian side, and there is still not even a beginning of a move on the settlement issue on the Israeli side, I think that even to consider this is, I find, an outstanding. I'm amazed by the thought of it. And I agree with the person we just heard. I do fear, and I'm almost sure, that if American troops will be sent into this kind of situation, it's a question of time until we have a number, I'm afraid, a considerable number of American body bags. It's the Beirut scenario all over again. And I think it would be really counterproductive. It would be wrong for America, and it will be disastrous for the region, precisely because the region does need American leadership but one that is reasonable and very cautious in its expectations and its way of involvement.
Ambassador Murphy, give me a Washington read on this, though, because if, as Ari suggests, that the region could continue to boil with violence, could that not also keep pressure on the Bush administration to do something dramatic, perhaps to commit troops or something else, rather than waiting for a moment when things are more quiet?
Well, I think the pressure is on, and that the president had to know that would be the case when he traveled to the area and when he endorsed the roadmap a year ago. Personally, I welcome that deeper involvement. As I say, I don't see any ability between the parties to do anything dramatic to help peace between by interacting with each other. I think America can do something, perhaps something less than the use of force, but there are a number of things. The way we could help reconstitute the Palestinian security forces, largely destroyed on the West Bank, in better shape in Gaza today, and perhaps a special injection of training in the Gaza area could speed the moment when the Palestinians can tell Israel, look, we are now ready to take over security in northern Gaza and keep attackers from entering Israel and control.
Ari Shavit, the idea that the United States still has a lot of room to move in terms of providing that kind of infrastructure support, political support, so the Palestinian leadership can actually lead. How would that go down in Israel?
I think that it will go down well, but beyond that, I would like here to agree with Ambassador Murphy. I think, but let me take us back to the Bush speech, or the Bush vision of June of last year. I think that if America goes back into that original concept, which said basically we are committed to the idea of a two-state solution and to the end of the Israeli occupation, and we want to see a Palestinian state, but we understand that in order to have a Palestinian state, Palestinian society must go through a democratic transformation, which is deep and real, not cosmetic. That was the original Bush ideology, and I think that was the right concept. I think that what we've seen since is the watering down of that concept and accepting, in again a bizarre way, European and UN ideas, which usually the U.S. does not accept on any other issue, which lead America into a position where it is committed to a Palestinian state but doesn't have really the tools of transforming Palestinian society in such a way that this Palestinian state to be would be a benign one and not a destabilizing one. So I think that if the administration would go back to the original thinking of the Bush vision and will try to work closely within the Palestinian society, not just with Mr. Abu Mazen, but really to have a deep transformation, democratic transformation in Palestine, just as the one that as America is committed to in Iraq, that will be the most helpful role. And I think that once we have a more democratic Palestinian society and state to be, there will be no excuses on the Israeli side, and we will really come closer to this two-state solution.
All right, let's move along. Ari, if I can, I just want to thank Neil for that call and go to Boston, Massachusetts. Joel's on the line. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. My first comment, first on U.S. troops or even NATO troops, I think that that really should be a last resort, and because I really don't think that that would accomplish the goals that everyone wants over there. I think it would end up being a bloodbath. I think what the Bush administration should be doing is putting more suggestive pressure on the Sharon government. I'm Jewish myself, but to tell them to take a stance of nonviolence. Like the next time there's a suicide attack, don't react. And the more they do that, the more the world is going to come to see who the actual aggressors are. And that would make it easier to create a coalition to, if needed, go in and separate the two or to, go after Hamas.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. And
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Delta Dental, founder of the Massachusetts Delta Dental Foundation, finding new ways to combat the lack of affordable and accessible dental care in Massachusetts. 1-800-DELTA-US. WBUR welcomes the Capital Steps to Boston June 17th through the 22nd. They will be performing their newest political musical satire at the Copley Theater. Tickets are available now through Ticketmaster and BossTix. The Capital Steps, the group that puts the mock in democracy. Coming up in the second hour of The Connection, ham radio in the 21st century. Long before the Internet brought the global village home, ham radio connected the world. The short waves, long reach, and high-tech future of today's ham radio enthusiasts. In the second hour of The Connection with Dick Gordon, coming up at 11 here on WBUR. WBUR supporters include Netnumina, partnering with financial companies to transform business challenges into viable e-solutions in Boston and New York, on the web at netnumina.com, and Wellington Management Company, providing investment advice to clients worldwide. Come explore the countryside and distinctive cuisine of Tuscany and Umbria with Sylvia Poggioli on our next Citizens of the World tour this summer. Proceeds help pay for the news. For more information, call 800-909-9287. Mostly cloudy, humid today, slight chance of showers, highs 65 to 70. Rain tonight, lows in the upper 50s. Tomorrow, off and on rain. It will be cooler, highs in the lower 60s. 70 degrees under overcast skies in Boston right now, with 68 and overcast at Beverly, 70 and mist at Hyannis at 10:39.
Org.
Thanks.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Should the United States do more to press for peace in the Middle East after the president's involvement in the summits in Egypt and in Jordan? Is the United States obliged to take a greater role in Middle East peace? We're asking the question today on the same day that there's been yet another targeted killing, some call it an assassination, a missile attack by the Israeli Air Force, killing five Palestinians. Yesterday's bus bomb in Jerusalem, 16 dead there. Joining me on the program today, Ambassador Richard Murphy. He's a senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations. And we're joined now by Daoud Kitab. He's a Palestinian journalist, director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. He's joining us on the line from Amman, Jordan. Daoud, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, sir.
We've been talking a lot this hour about some suggestions being made in Washington just in the last 24 hours about whether or not the United States should take part in a NATO peacekeeping or peacemaking force or send its own soldiers in. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think the U.S., the moment that the Bush administration decided to take such a high-profile position, they were basically saying we're involved, and the high-profile position is an invitation to all kinds of radical groups to try to kind of derail the process. So by coming to Aqaba and Sharm el-Sheikh, President Bush has put it on himself to be involved, and yes, he has to do something more than just stand around. There has to be proof that the U.S. is committed to the peace, that it wants to support its moderate allies in Palestine and in Israel, and it has to make clear that nothing is going to stop this process from moving in the direction that President Bush put when he said a Palestinian state by 2005.
Why do you say that the president's involvement, the sort of public photo op nature of the meeting, was an invitation to more violence?
because this region is so predictable, you could write the script without even seeing it. You know, the radicals don't want the peace process to move ahead. The moderates are afraid, are unable to move a process ahead. The moment that there is a public process like the roadmap, where everybody knows the different timelines involved, anyone who is against the peace process knows exactly what they need to do. The Palestinian radicals know what they need to do. Unfortunately, many in the Israeli government and in the settler movement know what they need to do to derail the process. And the political leaders don't have the strength and the will or the desire, some of them, to really move the process ahead. So we are in this cycle of violence that we are unable to break out of ourselves.
Are you saying that the only way any kind of serious conversation about peace can happen is in secret, like the original Oslo negotiations?
I believe strongly that we really have to move away from the cameras, we move away from any kind of a public exposure, and have the genuine people interested in peace in the leadership to work out all the details. Because if you do piece by piece, every concession in any agreement seen by itself can be seen as unjust and unfair. And the only way that you can really get the majority of the people who say in public opinion polls that they are for a two-state solution, for some kind of a moderate compromise agreement, the only way to get them involved is by working on some kind of a process where they can vote on a referendum. But if you leave one step at a time, somebody's going to try to stop it, because they will say, the right to return, we are against stopping the right to return. Palestinians must come back, and so on and so forth.
Ambassador Murphy, more in private, less in public.
Absolutely, but at the same time, the leaders have to steadily prepare, find ways of preparing their constituencies for the compromises that will have to be made. I agree it's better to come up with a package when you go public, but there's also a need to educate, to form public opinion along the route, and I think that was neglected badly, both by Arafat and by former Prime Minister Barak before Camp David.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 to Wake Forest, North Carolina now, and Mike's joining us. Hello, Mike.
Thank you. Your first caller spoke about the way he determines how much the violence is going to escalate by the closer we get to peace. Both of your guests have said boiling hate and the radicals will derail any peace plan. I think it's time to tear up the roadmap and draw a battle plan, choose a side, go in there, cut this out, and reconstruct after it's over with.
What do you mean, choose a side, Mike?
Choose a side. This next level of absurdity called the peacemaking, where we send in troops to shoot at both sides. That shows you our level of comprehension of what's going on over there. It's amazing because, you know, I was wondering what the next absurd move is going to be, and this is it.
But what you're advocating is the most extreme position from either side. That would be the Israeli notion of moving all Palestinians out, or the Palestinian notion of moving all the Israelis out.
Of course, the Israelis can't afford to move the Palestinians out of their economy, because the whole economy is based on the cheap labor, just as we have the immigrants in this country. Our economy depends on them. So it's all economics, and as your other guest said, it has nothing to do with ideology. It's strictly an economic situation over there. So we treat it, since it's destabilizing the region and destabilizing the world, we go in with a battle plan, choose a side, and let everybody choose a side, and we'll just hash it out that way, instead of this decades and centuries old appeasing both sides and treating them like two dogs that are one chain link away from getting each other's necks.
Just setting aside the notion of choosing a side, the idea of actually having a battle plan, having a plan at all, Ambassador, is that what you were talking about earlier when you raised the question, what would the mission be?
Yeah, I think you'd have a really tough debate in Washington as to about the contingencies that any force, be it NATO or American, would find itself in. Are they going to be blocking terrorist attacks? Well, yes, if they had enough knowledge to do so. Are they going to block hot pursuit by the Israelis? Are they ready to use force against both sides? I think it's something that needs very careful study. But on your caller's idea about the description of the roadmap as appeasing both sides, I think look at the roadmap as something more modest in the sense it's was seen as the way to get the parties back into negotiations. It wasn't the battle plan, admittedly. It wasn't the peace plan. But it was a way to get both sides focused and back at the table.
Daoud Kitab, something that was raised earlier in the program was a suggestion that if American soldiers or Western soldiers were brought into the Middle East in a peacemaking or peacekeeping role, that they would more likely end up being there as American soldiers were in Beirut, somewhat uncertain of what they were supposed to be doing, and consequently then open themselves to terrorist attacks by militant groups that are determined to make sure that the peace process doesn't happen. Do you think that's a reasonable look at what could go wrong if American soldiers went in?
Well, it is a possibility, but I think we're not that far at that point yet. I think the American government should tell the Sharon government to work out a ceasefire agreement with the Palestinian Authority. A ceasefire agreement needs to be worked out on both sides. They have to stop, the Israelis have to stop assassinations of Palestinians, and the Palestinians have to stop suicide attacks. If they work out a ceasefire and there's a need for monitors, military people to actually monitor some kind of a bilateral ceasefire agreement, then I think that would be a clear mission.
But don't but we've
right
been
now,
watching
Israel
and waiting for
a ceasefire.
That's what I was going to say. For, you know, for 2.5-3 years, we've been stuck in that same rut, waiting for the two sides to come to some sort of agreement.
No, but it's very unknown to the, most of the world that Israel doesn't want a ceasefire. Israel wants a unilateral Palestinian ceasefire. And a ceasefire, by its nature, is a bilateral one. Both sides have to agree. And in Sharm el-Sheikh and in Aqaba, and we've seen since then, the Israelis have said, we will not stop attacking the Palestinians. So I think there needs to be work on Sharon, and President Bush has said it, that there's a problem with Sharon. They have to agree to stop their unbelievable pursuit of Palestinians day in, day out, and they have to understand there's a bigger process, there's a bigger peace plan, and they have to stop going after assassinating heads of Palestinian groups.
Okay, I want to get back to the telephone lines now, to Arlington, Massachusetts. John's on the line. Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking the call. I've been listening with great interest. I want to chime in on the side of the last speaker that I think this is a thing that really must be done. It's something that the Palestinians have been crying out for
something must
years
be. You mean sending
now.
In the sending in American
sending
soldiers?
Sending in some sort of international peacekeeping force.
Right.
And with Israel, it's always the same story. It's always premature. It will never be the right time for Israel. And the only person that can convince an Israeli government to permit this as an American president. And this one seems to have it bitten his teeth, and if he really means it, this will be the time because it can happen. And whether he gives them a deadline and says, you know, you come up with something by X date, or we come in, or we get somebody in, the rest of the world has been ready for this for a long time. We've been the ones that have kept it out of the UN Security Council for years.
Ambassador Murphy, is this President Bush's moment?
Well, it is, but I think he's going to think hard and take some time to decide on such a departure from U.S. policy on committing troops. He certainly has the moment to press for something of substance from the Israelis that will strengthen the hand of the new leadership on the Palestinian side. And I'm referring, of course, particularly to settlements. Stop talking just about the odd site, uninhabited site on a distant hillside. Look at the 100-plus settlements that have been put in place since Prime Minister Sharon took office. That would be very meaningful in terms of giving Abu Mazen some political strength and ability to face down the Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and the Aqsa Brigade.
Daoud Kitab, would it work if the United States were able to persuade Israel to do something dramatic like that? Would it strengthen Abu Mazen's hands? It sounds a lot like Hamas is never going to pay any attention to what Palestinian elected or politicians are saying.
Not true. Hamas, and there's a pattern for the last 2 years. Hamas was about to sign a ceasefire agreement. There was a lot of public support for Abu Mazen. There was absolute interest, and there was a lot of hope built on the Sharm el-Sheikh and the Aqaba summits. People were ready for it. And, you know, I have to say this, not being a Palestinian, but the attempt on Rantisi, the assassination attempt, destroyed everything. And Palestinians have been saying the Israelis don't want to make the political price, and that's why they send somebody to try to, you know, stir up the pot. I think the Americans have to come down on the Israelis and say, you know, sit and be quiet and let's try to work this out. And I think settlement is one. And the other one is stop this assassination attempt, this supposedly preemptive strikes. And Rantisi has been around for all the time, walking around, and all of a sudden now they decided to go after him. I mean, the writing is on the wall that they wanted to find a way to get out of the political process that was required of them. And I'm sorry that we are paying the price on both sides, and I'm very, very sad for every Israeli, every Palestinian who keeps being killed because of politicians on all three sides trying to prove different things.
But doesn't it come down at some level, Ambassador Murphy, to the people themselves, the people who support politicians in both in the Palestinian territories and in Israel? Don't they have to say at some point to their leaders that they're just so sick and tired of the bombing and the killing that they'd be willing to back something more dramatic?
Well, it does ultimately come down to the people. I think leadership has a great role in helping shape popular thinking, but it's a nasty question you have to ask. Are both sides now tired enough of the killing that they are ready to start down the political road with a seriousness of purpose and will support their leaders? You can't say it's just the people or just the leaders. And what we have to be very much aware of is that this has been framed as a political negotiation over the years. Mm-hmm. The more it gets into absolute religious terms, I'm doing this because God commanded me, the less prospect there will ever be of reaching a peaceful settlement.
Ambassador Murphy, as ever, thanks so much for your help.
Thank you.
Ambassador Richard Murphy, senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations and was U.S. ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia. Daoud Kattab, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Daoud Kattab is a Palestinian journalist, director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. He was joining us from Amman, Jordan. Earlier in the program, we talked with Robin Wright. She's chief diplomatic correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Ian Fisher, a correspondent with the New York Times, joined us from Hebron. And Ari Shavit, a journalist with the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, was also with us on the program. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Lesley University, hosting an open house for undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral programs this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Information at 877-4-LESLIE. By the Boston Gamma Knife Center at Tufts New England Medical Center, non-surgical treatment for brain tumors, trigeminal neuralgia, and other neurologic disorders, bostongammaknifecenter.org. And Lala Roque on Beacon Hill, serving homestyle Persian cuisine for